Live. I am Jerry Usher in for Cy Kella today. Cy is still getting back up to full speed here, so continue to keep him in your prayers if you would. And it is a blessing for me to be filling in for Cy today. You can also catch me with Debbie Giorgiani on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie Monday through Friday at noon Eastern Time on many of these same EWTN radio affiliates. And today we've got 2 hours of Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin will have an open forum, kind of a bonus Friday open forum for you coming up in the second hour. And in this first hour, we're going to be talking with Abigail Favalli. Abigail is a writer, a professor, and speaker. She is at the Notre Dame professor in McGrath Institute for Church Life at Notre Dame. Her latest book, The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory, was just released by Ignatius Press last month. Abigail was received into the Catholic Church in 2014. She has a conversion memoir, Into the Deep, An Unlikely Catholic Conversion, which traces her journey from birthright evangelicalism to postmodern feminism and now to Roman Catholicism. And Abigail lives with her husband and four children in South Bend, Indiana. Abigail, so good to have you with us. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. This is great.
Well, and we have open phone lines, folks. This is we're going to be talking about some very important things, some really astonishing things, some eye-opening things going on in our culture today. You're no strangers to it, listeners of Catholic Answers Live. We want to take your questions today about the whole gender craze, insanity that's going on in our world today. We can talk about that. We can talk about the entire topic of gender, male and female, how the Catholic Church views those who identify as, for example, transgender or LGBTQ plus now. I think it's LGBTQIA plus at this point, adding letters all the time. What is a woman? All of these things have been in the news, and we're going to talk about them with Abigail and with you, the listeners of Catholic Answers Live, at 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Phone lines are wide open. Right now is the best time to call in. Abigail, if you can just give us a real Reader's Digest version of your conversion to Catholicism, I'd love to hear a little bit about it.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, I was raised evangelical, and I grew up in the Intermountain West, and I had a pretty typical evangelical upbringing, but when I went to college, I became really interested in feminism. I, like most college students, I was beginning to think seriously about my identity and my vocation, and for me, I really wanted to better understand what it meant to be a woman, especially in a Christian understanding. And I felt this need to better understand my dignity as a woman, especially from a Christian perspective. And the more I studied feminism, the more I absorbed this implicit worldview that's dominant in feminist theory that I call a postmodern worldview, which is this idea that all meaning is created by human beings. And eventually, feminism kind of became my religion, and that was my dominant framework of seeing the world. And then fast forward, after graduate school and getting a PhD and emphasizing feminist studies, I became a mother for the first time, and that really rocked my world and kind of disrupted some of my feminist assumptions about things just enough, I think, for God to really work on my heart. And then I pretty abruptly became Catholic. It's sort of a strange story. And I became Catholic while I still had some feminist questions and my feminist objections unresolved. And so it really took the first couple years of being Catholic for me to have a real whole worldview shift, especially around the topic of gender and sexuality. And so now, as a Catholic, I try to bring some of my insider knowledge of gender studies to dialogue with that from a Catholic perspective and help people better understand the terrain of gender out there. Because it is pretty confusing and changing all the time.
Wow. Yeah, Abigail Favalli is with us here on Catholic Answers Live. She is with the McGrath Institute for Church Life at Notre Dame, mother of four children, author of the book The Genesis of Gender, published last month, put out by Ignatius Press. If you have a question for Abigail, we got a couple of phone lines still open. Some are full and getting full faster at 888-318-7884. Almost slipped up and gave out the phone number for my show. This is Catholic Answers Live. I'm guest hosting for Cy Kell at Jerry Usher here. 888-318-7884. Abigail, I mean, there is so much we could cover. You hardly know where to start, but the entire topic of gender, male and female, has been, we're living through times right now. If you'd said to me, probably to you, probably to any sane person 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, that we would be seeing what we're seeing right now and the confusion and all of that's being promoted and promulgated, we would have thought somebody was insane to say that. Talk about, you know, kind of how this has all unfolded in the last few years.
Well, it seems very sudden, but some of the changes that we're seeing have been in the works for a very long time. So the concept of gender, and this is one of the things that I cover in the book, The Genesis of Gender. So one way in which I talk about the genesis of gender is tracing the development of the concept of gender over the 20th century. And then also talking about how what I call the gender paradigm compares with the Genesis paradigm. But in terms of the development of the concept of gender, the first person to use the term gender was John Money, psychologist and sexologist John Money in the 1950s. And he used it to articulate his theory of the malleability of our identity as identity development in terms of whether one is a boy or a girl. So he had a very social constructionist view of development. And he thought that gender was entirely malleable for the first few years of life. And then he used the term gender to name that malleability instead of sex. And then feminist theory took that distinction between sex and gender, and that's how it really swept through the humanities, with the idea being that gender refers to the social and cultural expressions of sex, whereas sex refers to biology. Then in the 80s and 90s, feminist theory took a postmodern turn, and the work of Judith Butler gained prominence. And Butler was the first person to really argue that not only is gender a social construct, but sex itself, the way we think about male and female, that very categorization is in fact a social construct and not a matter of fact. And so that paved the way for what we're seeing now, which is almost a complete reversal of that classic gender feminist distinction or sex gender distinction, which was sex is biology, gender is social. Well, now we have this idea of gender identity, which is one's inner self perception. And that is real, right? That's perceived to be real and fixed. Whereas sex is assigned at birth. It's this arbitrary social imposition. So that's where we are today. And the word gender has come to mean what it means.
You know, and also, you know, this is impacting kids. I mean, at the youngest of ages, Abigail, it's astonishing, really. It hardly seems possible they could be thinking up these things on their own, or this is just sort of spontaneously breaking out among young people. Are there influences upon them? And kind of a second part to that question is this sort of like a cool trend? I mean, kids see things like this happening and they say, oh, that would be cool to kind of go along with that. So that's kind of a two-part question. I hope that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So, until the last few years, especially the last decade, there would be instances, very rare, of early onset childhood gender identity disorder or gender dysphoria. And typically, the vast majority of those cases of gender dysphoria would resolve through the process of puberty and adolescence. So almost 80% of that gender dysphoria would desist by the time those young people grew up. But now what we're seeing is a very different thing. We're seeing for the first time adolescent girls experiencing gender dysphoria in huge numbers. And the wave is primarily girls, although I will say that boys are also kind of catching up, but still lagging behind in terms of trans identification or non-binary identification. So we're seeing an entirely new cohort emerge where a lot of these young people don't have early onset gender dysphoria, but it comes on a little bit later. And then instead of being given time to just go through puberty and start to develop and sexually mature, and probably desist from the gender dysphoria, now we're having this new framework of gender affirmative care, which is putting young people very quickly on a pathway of lifetime medicalization. So the standard treatment now is to put a gender dysphoric child on puberty blockers to actually stop the process of puberty. And not because of a physiological condition, but simply to prevent the masculinization or feminization of the body in order to make room for later cosmetic changes. So that's, and then the belief is that these cosmetic changes will then alleviate some psychological distress. But there really is not good evidence. There's not sound scientific evidence that supports the medicalization, especially of gender dysphoric young people. So what we're seeing is really experimental medicine. And it's a medical scandal, honestly, that's brewing. And I think adults need to be much more informed and concerned, especially adults in positions of responsibility, such as parents and teachers and psychologists and doctors. Because if you really look at the evidence and you really look at what's happening to young people, it's really troubling.
Yeah, that's an understatement. Abigail Favalli is with us here on Catholic Answers Live. I'm Jerry Usher. Honored to be filling in for Cy Kellett here on the program today. We are going to get to your phone calls in just a moment. I am not surprised, Abigail. We've got full phone lines here. This is we're talking about a subject matter that is on the hearts and minds, heavy on the hearts and minds of many of our, probably hopefully most of our listeners. So we will get to your calls in just a moment here. Just want to mention before we do that, the dictionary defines a trifecta as a perfect group of three, winning three times. Well, what a great way to describe what's going on at shop.catholic.com this weekend. Listen up, folks. First of all, if you spend $50 or more, Catholic Answers will take $10 off your order when you enter promo code BONUSBUCKS at checkout. And on top of that, we're celebrating double point days at shop.catholic.com all weekend long. That's doubling the Catholic Answers rewards points for every dollar you spend. And to finish up this trifecta, we're giving you 50 extra rewards points for every Catholic Answers School of Apologetics course you enroll in during the month of July. If you haven't signed up already, be sure to sign up for the Catholic Answers Rewards Program. And here's a little secret. If you've shopped recently, you've already earned points. All you need to do to claim them is sign up for the rewards program. Visit shop.catholic.com this weekend and take advantage of all these great deals.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
This is Raul Gatto, founder of the JP2 Catholic Radio Network. Catholic Radio promotes the sense of the personal encounter, a type of encounter found between a radio host and callers, helps to soften up the heart and open it up to receive the word, which is the good news. As a result, hearts are transformed and lives are saved because of Catholic Radio.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Well, Catholic Answers Live is coming up on 25 years of broadcasting. the great Programming Apologetics and Evangelization on January 5th of 2023. And for all those 25 years, the phone number has been the same. And I was part of helping to pick out that phone number as the first host of this show. And I'm not talking about myself, but I was going to say we got the phone number 888-31-TRUTH. For a reason. This program has been bringing you the truth about everything important in the church, spirituality, sacraments, faith lives, family life, all of that for coming up on 25 years. And so keep your radio dial right here on this program each and every day at this time. And our guest this hour is Abigail Favalli. She is with the McGrath Institute for Church Life at Notre Dame, mother of four. They live in South Bend, Indiana. And we are going to go to your phone calls here. Abigail's book, by the way, is the Genesis of Gender, a Christian Theory, published by Ignatius Press just last year. So thanks to those of you who are on the line. We will work our way through you as you called in, meaning Thomas is first in Warren, Michigan, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Hello, Thomas. Welcome.
Hey, hello.
Yeah. How can we help?
So my question was in regards to a lot of the my friends will sometimes bring these up in discussions, but it's the whole gender is a spectrum kind of question. Like, I kind of understand that some people, like some men, have a tendency to maybe like things that are culturally maybe more feminine, and some women like things are maybe more seen as masculine, like maybe some woman like to go out and box or something, and that can be seen as more masculine. But they kind of say like, oh, it can't stop there. You know, those are just cultural things, and it can keep going until, you know, there's no line. And a lot of times they'll bring up like these scientific papers per se that they'll find that seem pretty like legit. Like they'll go on stuff like Google Scholar, which it's hard for me because I'm not like some biologist or something, so I can't really talk to them at that kind of level in regards to it. Hopefully that question made sense.
Sure. So I think the first thing I would do is to maybe make a distinction between sex and gender and to ask them whether they're referring to sex or gender, or maybe what they mean by gender, right? Because when you talk about gender being a spectrum, and the examples you mentioned are all kind of cultural expressions of masculinity and femininity. And indeed, those things can be on a spectrum, right? You're exactly right. So some women prefer things, activities or traits that are generally associated with men and vice versa, right? But when you talk about sex, like biological sex being a spectrum, and that's what I'm guessing you're referring to when you talk about them bringing in scientific papers in order to say that sex itself is a spectrum. So depending on what exactly they're saying, first of all, ask them to define their terms. That's always a good first question. But the idea that sex is a spectrum often depends upon the argument that there are intersex conditions, or what's better known as disorders of sexual development. That's the term used in the by medical practitioners. And so intersex conditions refer to over a dozen different kinds of conditions that might disrupt the normal sexual development process. But the term intersex is often used in order to imply that there's some kind of third sex or some kind of condition that's somehow beyond the categories of male and female. But that's really inaccurate and also potentially dehumanizing, because it suggests that, say, a little girl who is born with vaginal agenesis is not really a girl because she has a variation in sexual development. So it's important to realize that disorders of sexual development happen to males and females, right? They're not exemptions from the sex binary. So when we get down to it, sex is a binary. There are only two gametes, two kinds of sex cells in sexually reproducing species. It's a hard binary. There's never been an instance of a human being that can produce both kinds of sex cells. So even in the more complex cases of DSDs or disorders of sexual development, either maleness or femaleness will predominate if you look at the entire body and the way the organism is, the way the body is organized in a particular person. So that's one way I would approach it.
All right, Thomas.
Yeah, that made sense. Could I have a follow-up question?
Yeah, real quick. We got a lot of folks to get to. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, this was kind of something you said earlier about the experiments done on gender by a guy in like the 40s or something, and it's come up in conversation. But they, mm-hmm. my friends would just be like, oh, he's kind of like the German scientist in the 30s or 40s who did bad things on people, but we found a lot about like frostbite, the effects of frostbite, and I don't know how to tell him that.
Well, I mean, I guess the idea, so he's the first one to kind of come up with this idea of gender identity as something that's separate from sex. So we can talk about gender in a sense that's distinct from sex, but the problem was when we go to outright separation. And so if that was his hypothesis, that gender identity and sex can be separated, if you look at his experiment on the Reimer twins, which is who both ended up killing themselves, it's pretty clear that his hypothesis was proven wrong. Okay, so this idea, however, just took wings and went through humanities and the social sciences and has become entrenched and unquestioned, but it doesn't actually have a lot of robust scientific evidence behind it.
All right. Thank you, Thomas, for your participation in the program today. We appreciate it very much. Our guest on Catholic Answers Live is Abigail Favalli. She is with the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame and author of the book that was published last month by Ignatius Press, The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory. We're going to move along to Lisa, who is in Massachusetts, listening on the Station of the Cross. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the conversation. Hello, Lisa. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, good. You're on with Abigail Favalli. Go ahead.
Hi, Abigail. I have kind of a generalish question from more of a Catholic perspective as to how to deal with an adult child who is insisting that they are non-binary, although physiologically a woman, and she's refusing to be called by the name that her parents have named her, as well as be referred to as her, and won't have anything to do with the family unless her need of being called this name and being called they is met. And I'm not quite how about maintaining a relationship.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's an incredibly difficult one, right? And a relationship does go two ways, right? So you can't completely control how another person will respond to boundaries that you set. But in terms of doing everything, you know, making reasonable attempts to preserve the relationship, I think that one thing is that once you get used to it, it's pretty easy to avoid pronouns, especially when you're talking with someone. So that could potentially be a neutral place. Like, well, you know, I can't use the pronoun they because that conflicts with my beliefs, but I'll agree not to use the pronoun she, you know, or something like that, you know, trying to kind of find a place to meet. Also, I don't know if the relationship has kind of disintegrated too much to make this possible, but just to ask this person more about what they're going through and ask when you say you're non-binary, I want to understand more what you mean by that, because different people can mean different things by it. And then just really listen to what this person is saying and their experience, and maybe establish a little bit of trust there, while also, again, like holding to the boundaries that you need to according to your conscience. When it comes to names, again, that there could be some kind of middle ground to meet on. Sometimes people go by different nicknames. So I think there are accommodations or steps that you can make with prudential judgment while still using language that is truthful. But in in the end, you know, I think it's important to be really patient with people as they're figuring this stuff out and exploring, all these different, you know, ways of understanding gender, and making it clear that no matter what, you love them, and you're here for them, you're available if they want to have a relationship, while still holding on to the boundaries that you, you need to set.
I hope that is helpful, Lisa. We're getting ready for a short break here in the program. This is Catholic Answers Live. Feel free to call in any other time, Lisa, and if you need further you know, consultation on that very, very difficult situation. You are far from alone, Lisa, in going through that right now, and we are going to keep you in our prayers, and especially this young adult child that you are. Well, that's kind of a young adult child, if it's a young adult who won't associate with the family, but we'll keep all of you, in, including that individual, in our prayers. Maddie is in Ohio coming up next. Mary in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Tom is in Visalia, California. Haley is in Newburgh, Oregon. And we have a line open here today on Catholic Answers Live, talking with Abigail Favalli, who is the author of The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory, about so many of the very wacky but still very serious things that are going on in our culture about gender and gender issues, and so many of our young people misidentifying or kind of going with the flow, if you will. So feel free to call 888-318-7884.
Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Can you defend the Church's teaching on the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist? Do you desire a deeper relationship with our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament? Join us September 22nd through 25th for the annual Catholic Answers Conference in San Diego. This year's theme is the Eucharist, I Am With You Always. Featuring all the Catholic Answers speakers and special guest Bishop Thomas Papraki, use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Matt Swaim here. Monday on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll discuss the dramatic conversion and heroic witness of St. Camillus de Lillis, plus all the latest news, weather, sports, and more. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Great to have you along today. We're just going to stay right with your phone calls and your questions for Abigail Favalli, who's with the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame, a convert to the Catholic faith in 2014, and the author of The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory, just released by Ignatius Press last month in June of 2022. So up next in the order in which you call is Maddie in Ohio, watching the video stream on YouTube. Hi, Maddie. Welcome to the conversation.
Oh, hi there. How are y'all doing tonight?
Doing well. Hope you are, too.
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
Great, great.
All right, my question had to do with biblical femininity, and, well, I'm not the most
feminine person. I mean, I do a lot of the heavy lifting around here. I do a lot of the yard work. I do a lot of the, like, if the things need fixed, I fix them. I know how to, like, change oil in a car. I can lift heavy objects. I'm just not typically your feminine kind of girl. And trying to reconcile that with, you know, being a biblically accurate feminine woman, I don't know how much overlap there is there with that. I mean, do I need to stop being, well, myself, or do I need to do something different? I don't know. I'm just kind of confused.
I love this question so much. Thank you for calling. And I relate to it. You know, I think the short answer is no, you don't have to do anything different, right? So I love the way that John Paul II uses the terms masculinity and femininity. So he is very careful to only use those terms in relation. So he'll use the term masculinity only in relation to a male person and femininity only in relation to a female person, because masculinity and femininity are the way we live out our sex in the world, right? So it's actually the body of the person who's doing the action that gives it its character as masculine or feminine. So I think we tend to talk about masculinity and femininity as if they're sort of attached to objects or traits or activities, but it's persons who are masculine and feminine. Now, it's true that like an individual's, like one individual woman's femininity might bear more resemblance to, say, a typical kind of masculinity in her particular culture. But that doesn't mean it's not feminine. So I would say when you're changing the oil in the car, you're doing a feminine action because you're a woman who's doing it, right? So I think we need to ground our understanding of masculinity and femininity in embodiment. And then there's freedom in how we choose to live out and answer the vocation to love in the world as men and women.
Mm-hmm. Any follow-up, Maddie, on that?
I think that makes sense. Because, yeah, I do, like, do stuff around the church and stuff like that. Like, I sing in choir and stuff. So that makes sense.
Good. Glad that we could help you with that and hopefully bring you a greater sense of peace of mind than hopefully you already had. Feel free to call back the program anytime, Maddie. We appreciate you joining us at 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. You are calling in to talk to Abigail Favalli, who is the author of the recently released book from Ignatius Press, The Genesis of Gender, a Christian Theory. And following Maddie is Mary, who is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, listening on Alexa. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jerry. Dr. Favalli, I am so thrilled to speak with you. I never heard of you before today, but I can relate to the feminist background and then coming into the church. And your answer to Maddie was beautiful. Whatever she does, she is innately feminine. She is who she is. Anyway, that aside, I have a son in a Catholic university. He's very much theology of the body minded. He grew up with that. He has I still say I'm a feminist, but I say I'm a feminist in that you look at the complementarity of the two genders to promote both and see each equal, but, you know, putting forth the value of each. But anyway, the thing that I'm wondering about, since he's been, you know, really, his views aren't accepted in this Catholic university very much, because he's just so theology of the body minded, and it seems like if you don't go with current culture, that you just are. It's the cancel culture kind of thing, but it's really odd that he's in a Catholic university. Where does theology of the body, on the whole, fit in with this in the scheme of Catholic universities and perceptions? And I know that's a broad question, but what's your perspective on it, Doctor?
That's a good question. So one complicated factor is that, especially when it comes to gender studies and gender theory, that discipline has no interaction whatsoever with theology of the body. So I got a master's degree and doctorate in feminist literary criticism, gender theory. I never even knew there was this Catholic theology of the body. It was never on the radar. It wasn't even refuted. It was just completely ignored. So I think, unfortunately, when you have academic institutions that have especially gender studies departments, they tend to follow that disciplinary narrowness and just not, they don't engage seriously with the Catholic tradition. And you would hope that a Catholic institution would engage more seriously. My guess is that there might be specific professors who deal with the theology of the body, but it's true. There are, I think, there's a big blind spot in academia, especially when it comes to the Catholic tradition and theology of gender and woman and sexual difference. I never discovered it until after I became Catholic. So there are places where it's taught, but yeah, it's too often sidelined in academia for sure.
Okay. Never mind. You understand theology of the body and how it actually does, how the whole idea of it can be a support in some ways to gender ideology and also big contradiction too, but you know what I mean. Okay.
Yeah.
I really am thrilled to have come upon the show today, and I'm really looking forward to reading your book. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Mary, for the call. That's a good, perhaps, segue lead-in. Abigail, I wanted to certainly get from you the details on, you know, where people can get the book, and just give us a kind of a quick snapshot of what's between the covers and where people can get your book, The Genesis of Gender.
Sure. So it's published by Ignatius. So you can order directly from Ignatius Press, which I highly recommend. Although if you want to order from Amazon, you also can get it on Amazon. And The Genesis of Gender basically gives an overview of how the conversation about gender became so confused, and also how it connects to the feminist movement and the widespread acceptance of contraception in our culture. So one of the arguments I make is that as our culture embraced contraception, that really shifted our understanding of what it means to be a man or a woman. So our understanding of manhood and womanhood shifted away from procreative potential to things like appearance and behavior and roles. And so now we're at this place where if you can approximate the appearance or the behavior, then that means you actually have changed sex. So there's been this kind of cultural forgetting of the fact that we are sexed beings who reproduce sexually. And then I also talk about some of the trends that are happening now, especially affecting young people and young women. And then I also articulate what the understanding of gender is according to Genesis, or more specifically, according to a Christian worldview and a Christian understanding of the human person.
Beautiful. Well, I am more than happy to encourage our listeners to get any book that's talked about on this program. But dear friends, those of you who are listening right now, I was going to say, especially if you have kids, but even if you don't, these issues are threatening to transform our culture in a very horrific way. And so I really, really, really want you to get a hold of Abigail's book, The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory. Ignatius.com is Ignatius Press's website, Ignatius.com, or if you do your commerce on Amazon, you will find the book there as well. Again, The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory. Okay, back to the calls to Visalia, California. Tom, while watching on YouTube today. Hi, Tom. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Thanks for your patience.
I love listening to the program. My question, if I may plug myself real quick, I just started up a new YouTube channel called Speak. And we're trying to address a lot of the issues of Christianity and different forms of Christianity. I'm falling in love with the Catholic Church. I'm a Protestant by upbringing. My question for you, because, you know, I may broach this subject of genders with people I may have on discussions, and I'd like to create a discussion format instead of a debate format, so that we can try to have a healthy conversation. Do you guys have any advice for me on healthy ways to approach the opposition in regards to the biblical context?
Well, I think whenever you're dialoguing with someone who disagrees, I think it's helpful to see if you can identify shared values, and then, so in other words, common ground, but then also that will help clarify where you differ. And also digging into, I think, underlying presuppositions, underlying worldview presuppositions. This is something I think that's a real problem in discussions around gender, because people just talk in slogans. You know, they're like, gender is a spectrum, you know, trans women are women, but no one's actually really defining terms. And so, well, what is gender, or what is your understanding of a human being, or, you know, do you think there is innate meaning to anything, right? So those kind of deeper worldview questions, I think, would be important to ask. And then, you know, apply the principle of charity, like try to understand the opponent's viewpoint in its most substantive and strongest form. So hopefully you can find someone who can come from a place of goodwill and who's willing to dialogue with you.
Really good, especially the last part. Thank you very much for the insight.
Oh, you're welcome, Tom. Thanks for joining the conversation today, which will continue in a moment. Haley in Newburgh, Oregon, hold on. You are going to be next. We have Patricia in Leesburg, Virginia. Patricia also in Pennsylvania. And a room on an open phone line for you to get into this discussion with Dr. Abigail Favalli. And we're talking about her book, newly released by Ignatius Press, The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory, just published and put out last month. So it's hot off the press. And you need to get yourself a copy at Ignatius.com. But before we go back to the calls, I want to get back to something very, very important, and that is the Catholic Answers trifecta opportunity going on. The dictionary defines a trifecta as a perfect group of three, winning three times. And what a great way to describe what's going on at shop.catholic.com this weekend, folks. This weekend, take advantage of this. First of all, when you spend $50 or more, we'll take $10 off your order when you enter promo code BONUSBUCKS at checkout. And on top of that, Catholic Answers is celebrating double point days at shop.catholic.com all weekend long. That's doubling the Catholic Answers reward points for every dollar you spend. And to finish up this trifecta, we're giving you 50 extra rewards points for every Catholic Answers School of Apologetics course you enroll in during the month of July. So if you haven't signed up yet, be sure to do so for the Catholic Answers Rewards Program. And a little bit of a secret, if you've shopped already recently, you've already earned points. All you need to do to claim them is sign up for the Rewards Program. Visit shop.catholic.com this weekend and take advantage of all these great deals.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
This is Conversations with Consequences, where we delve deeper into issues affecting our church, our country, and our core, the family.
As Catholics, we need to be informed, aware, and able to talk through some of the tough topics that we're facing in our culture and in our world. Conversations with Consequences gives us the tools to do so.
It's not enough to pray. We have to be a light for the world.
Conversations with Consequences, tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Your phone calls here on Catholic Answers Live. Our first hour today with Abigail Favalli. She is the author of the book from Ignatius Press. It's called The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory. Hour number two today will feature a bonus open forum this week with Jimmy Akin of Catholic Answers Live. So stay around for that. But we're going to go right back to your phone calls for Abigail. And Haley is up next in Newburgh, Oregon, listening online at Catholic.com. Hi, Haley.
Hello. How are
Hi
you?
There. Good. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, Abby. How are you?
Hi, Haley. I'm good.
I've been sitting on your front step for like 2 months now waiting for you to come home. Where the heck
I
are
know,
you?
I'm sorry.
I love you and I miss you. We all miss you so much. We're so happy for you in Notre Dame. and the McGrath Institute. We're so, so proud of you. I'm curious, in 2019, in June 2019, the Vatican published its first document addressing the boundaries of gender in the church institutions. And we're just wondering how that's been received and what is what's going on. And in terms of like the response to that, the church's response to the Vatican's document, do you know anything about that?
So are you talking about the, which document are you talking about? The man and woman, he created them?
Yeah.
I mean, what's interesting about, you know, the Catholic Church is a big ship that moves slowly through history, right? And this is such a rapidly changing phenomenon. So a lot of dioceses right now are coming up with policies or doctrinal statements in order to respond to what's happening, especially in schools, which I think can't, in general, is a good move, although I think there are, you know, better and worse sort of ways to approach it. But there are some things that I see that are positive, I guess. So I think if Catholic institutions are able to hold to their Catholic character here, but also be places where they can accompany young people who are questioning their gender, that can meet a real need in our culture, because a lot of schools are just have bought into this, right, and are kind of propagating gender identity theory. And so if Catholic institutions are, with compassion but also clarity, giving a true account of the human person, then that can meet a real cultural need. So I think there's a lot of discussions happening. I mean, I don't have like a connection in the Vatican, so I don't totally know if there are more pronouncements to be made, but I'm guessing that there will be more official documents in response to what's happening. But I will say that a consistent theme in Pope Francis's statements and documents has been opposition to gender theory, and it's connected to his idea of having an integral human ecology, because part of caring for creation involves caring for our own bodies and respecting their sexed identity. So that's been something that's consistent with Pope Francis.
Yes.
All right, Haley.
Yes, thank you. I was just curious what the Vatican was doing with all this going on right now. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hi.
I kind of thought that might be the case. Abigail, isn't you were previously at George Fox University? That's in Newburgh, is it not?
It is, yeah, right. Yeah. So Haley's husband teaches at George Fox, too.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks, Haley, for touching base with Abigail. I'm sure Abigail is very blessed by that. We have a couple of Patricias on the line. The first one is in Leesburg, Virginia, listening on the EWTN app. Hi, Patricia.
How are you?
Doing okay. Glad you called.
Yes, thank you. Your last answer was a great lead-in to my question. What, in your opinion, should the Catholic diocese, particularly in the United States and Catholic parishes, do to support families who are facing this issue within their families? I'm a catechist, and I teach at the grade level that where the contagion starts, and I'm not seeing that we've got real tools out there at the parish level to help families who are dealing with this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think we've been caught on the back foot a little bit with this. So I think you're exactly right, though, that parishes and schools need to be able to meet and support families who are going through this, because, you know, this, I think it's too easy to fall into this rhetoric of, oh, this is happening to people who are like outside the church and we have to protect ourselves from that. But no, this is very much happening to Catholic children, Catholic families. And so we have to really make sure that we're supporting them in our parishes and in our schools. So I think especially for catechists and priests and other parish ministers, educating yourself on what's going on, I think, is very important. Getting kind of a sense of what the data says out there, or, you know, what the getting a better sense of what the terrain is. And then I think that will help you be able to respond with good information and accurate information. But I also think it's really important for parishes and schools to not just get into a defensive posture, but to actually articulate a positive vision of the human person and have a whole person affirmation approach. So to affirm, first of all, the belovedness of anyone who's wrestling with their gender, right? They need to hear that they are infinitely loved by God as they are. And also the affirming the goodness of the body. I think the dignity of the body, the goodness of body, and also affirming the uniqueness of the individual. I mean, this is something I was kind of talking about in earlier answers, but I think sometimes young people are rebelling against narrow scripts about what it means to be a girl or what it means to be a boy, or even very hypersexualized, kind of influenced by porn sort of scripts in our culture. So young people are faced with a lot of negative understandings of what manhood and womanhood look like, and they're wanting to kind of opt out in some ways. So I think it's really important for Catholics to not just get into a defensive posture here, but to really try to articulate the truth with compassion, with clarity, but also to show the beauty of the Catholic understanding of the human person. But I'm hoping that part of my work in McGrath will be to help develop resources specifically for parishes and schools, because I think that's a huge need.
Yep. Okay, Patricia.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have limited time, but we have our second Patricia in Pennsylvania listening on Catholic.com. Got to be rather brief, Patricia, but we wanted to help you out. Go ahead.
Yes, I will try. I'm not typically very succinct. I'll follow right on the question from Patricia in Leesburg. I lived there for 40 years, which is funny. Is there not a greater value carrying in the charitable framework you suggest to expose this agenda that is being foisted on our children? You may say, for instance, as you just said, they are being rebellious about, you know, their feeling is one of rebellion against this idea that there is no fluidity, let's say. But they've been taught this through an agenda, and as the host says, this horrendous agenda. Can it not be an even keel here that we can approach this, not just to not be defensive, but also to expose the agenda that's being foisted on us? It's just... I don't know. So there's my question.
That's okay, Patricia. You were very succinct and articulate. We got about 2 minutes, Abigail.
All right. Now I have to be succinct. Okay. So I think what we need to do is to forcefully argue against this framework that's being imposed in our culture, on our youth, and we need to argue forcefully against that framework. But at the same time, we have to be able to receive the people who are caught up in that framework with love. And that's a really hard balance. So I think we have to do both, though. So to critique the framework, I call it the gender paradigm in my work. And my book does critique it pretty forcefully. But at the same time, I do think it's important that we also humanize the people who are understanding their experience through that framework, even though it's a bad framework.
Okay, Patricia, thank you very much for, you've waited a long time to get on the program. We appreciate that. Bob in Cincinnati, Curtis in Indiana, we're not going to get to either of you this hour with Abigail Favalli. We have an open forum with Jimmy Akin coming up in hour number two here on today's Catholic Answers Live. So you can start filling the phone lines with your apologetics questions, evangelization, any questions about the faith, the sacraments, how to develop a prayer life, anything you would like to talk with Jimmy Akin about is is fair game here at 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Abigail Favalli, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful hour. It always passes too quickly, but I have a strong feeling that the folks at Catholic Answers Live will have you back on the program again.
That'd be great.
Okay. Do you have a website or anything?
I do have a website. I don't know exactly what it is, though.
Okay. Well, we will.
It's like a Wix site. Yeah, I'm on.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you just Google Abigail Favalli, I think it pops up. But
okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Great, great work. The best of luck to you there at the McGrath Institute. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Open forum, as I said, with Jimmy Akin coming up next hour. 888-318-7884. 888-31-TRUTH. That's all we know here is the truth at Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin is going to step in here and talk to you in just a few minutes.